Welcome to the Turkey Hunter Podcast, the original all turkey, all the time podcast with your co-hosts Andy Galliano and Cameron Whittington.
In our weekly podcast, we're going to bring you some wild turkey calling tips like this.
From there, we're going to go into she's aggravated. There's another hen that's challenged her, or she's challenging another hen. She's going to cut an excited yelp.
Advice from old pro turkey hunters like this.
The turkeys typically don't like, I think, more times than not, to travel in an easterly direction into the sun first thing in the morning, especially after he gets up. It's a blinding thing. It's just like you. It's hard for you to see into the sun. Mm-hmm. So if I have a choice, I'm going to try to make it so that I'm going to be on the west side in the morning, east side in the afternoon of a turkey.
Exciting live hunts like this.
Holy crap, they're coming. Holy cow.
Then we're going to teach you how to cook your bird with advice such as this.
With some fresh rosemary and garlic, and then cool that off and spread that along the inside of that butterflied turkey breast that we've seasoned on both sides.
Wildlife management tips for your property, especially with turkeys like this.
If you look at the type of habitats that turkeys need for nesting and brooding, that tends to be habitat that can be managed more successfully with growing season fire than with dormant season fire.
And hopefully along the way, we'll get plenty of these.
Well, on November the 28th of 1953, I was hatched. When I popped out of my mom and the baby doctor spanked me on the bottom, I went, oh, and I've been doing it ever since.
I like that.
Thank you for tuning in, and now for this week's show. Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. You are listening to episode number 479, The Sweet Voice of the Wild Turkey with Denny Gulvis, part two. And I am your co-host and the guy who has declared turkey season 2024 to be the year of the swimmer.
And I'm your co-host and the guy who's enjoyed seeing success picks with our own turkey calls in them.
Oh, yeah. Those have been awesome. Of course, I've got a few of those. I know you've got a few of those.
Yeah, but I kind of knew that would probably happen. It's pretty cool seeing friends and customers of ours who've already sent us photos with they're the turkey hunter diaphragm calls and a true wild turkey gobbler hanging behind it, you know?
Yes, indeed.
Pretty neat stuff. I don't know. It was kind of a cool moment for me when that happened. I was like, how cool is that? Like, a call that says the turkey hunter on it was used to kill the turkey. And I don't know. That's just kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's cool.
It's really cool.
We're not even making the calls. Can you imagine what the...
Yeah.
Picker feels like when he sees those pictures.
Yeah, we probably should make sure to forward those to Andrew because he made the call.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, that's been awesome. So, you know, I guess when I kill a bird using the call and I take a picture of the call with the bird, people would expect to see that because you can say you killed a turkey with any call.
Mm-hmm.
Or every single call that you have in your vest. You can take a picture with that turkey call and that turkey and send it to whomever you want. And they're going to think you killed that turkey with that call. But, you know, I have no doubt because I've killed two myself with one of our diaphragms. Well, two of our diaphragms, actually. So,
yeah. Well,
you know,
and heck,
they work.
Our call maker up in Pennsylvania, we have a new prototype we're working on, a potential call we're going to add to the lineup. He goes outside and practices his calling on it, sends us a video clip of it. There's a dang gobbler hammering him while he's calling. And he ended up calling him up as like 3 or 4 longbeards.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
We both said, well, that passes the test. We're in on that prototype.
No doubt. He said, I'm sending you and Cameron one each. And I was like, yeah, just go ahead and start making them.
Yeah, I think we're going to pass that one. It looks like it passes the ultimate test.
Uh-huh.
That was awesome. But why is this the year of the swimmer for you? I know the first story involved some seriously deep water with your hunting this year.
Yeah.
Did that happen again?
Well, it does. And all I can say is you don't always have to call them across a creek. Sometimes you just have to call them to the edge of it.
Got to get him before he flops into the creek, though.
Well, I wouldn't. The getting him before he flopped into the creek was not a concern. If he flopped into the creek, he would have been closer to me.
So you still had to go retrieve your game, though.
I had to go retrieve the game. But, you know, I will say this. It is not December or January.
Yeah, that part's nice.
I don't necessarily mind getting wet to cross a creek to go retrieve a bird.
Absolutely.
I'll cross one to go just hunt one.
Yeah. But if
one down across the creek, you better believe I'm happily going across that creek, assuming it's not a dangerous situation. You know, I'm not going to cross a creek that's flooded and has a very strong current that I can't see the bottom of the creek.
Yeah.
But yeah, I trudged across the creek in my new boots that are waterproof until you are up to your belly button in water. They're very waterproof except for the top of them where your legs go in.
Yeah, there's a hole there.
Yeah, only on each boot has a hole there.
That's crazy. I don't know why they design them like that these days.
And they will flat fill up with water. So anyway, it was an awesome walk back to the truck with squeaky socks inside soaking wet boots.
Hey, won't be the last time either. At least this time it was to get the gobbler, not to just try to get to him.
Yeah.
Usually they just gobble enough to get you to cross and then they shut up forever, you know? So
very true.
Man, that's awesome. Well, we've got another great one today with Denny Gulvis Part 2. Before we hop in here for that, you know, we were talking about the turkey calls. Just a reminder, if you want to buy some diaphragm turkey calls for the spring turkey season, they'll be linked in the show notes in our Shopify store. We've got some merchandise available in there as well, and turkey calls that are absolute killers. We're getting really good reviews, starting to get kill pictures as seasons start opening up. They work, guaranteed.
Yeah.
And we got the merchandise, and then also you can sign up to be a Patreon member if you want to support the show. We would love to have you join us on Patreon, where you'll get bonus content, have a chat room where we're involved some, get a book of the month, and who knows what else. You know, we may be posting some whole podcasts for just our Patreon members in the future, or have talks in there that only they get to hear. There's a lot we can do with that. We sure appreciate your support of the show that way.
Yeah. And for those of you who have subscribed, the Denny Gulvis bonus content will be released, if not by the time this podcast post that you're listening to, then shortly thereafter.
Yeah, that'll be a pretty substantial interview bonus content section for Patreon members from this one, because we had a lot of content from Denny.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you this, man, we got some awesome interviews coming up that we banked, and we've got some awesome pro tips. I'm telling you, I've already killed one bird using one of the pro tips that we got. Cameron and I did the interview on one day. The next morning, I said, you know what? I'm going to an area just like this. And I did. And not an hour later, I was toting a bird out. So
wow.
That's pretty cool. There's some great, great tips in there. And I'm not just saying that to try to sell something, because, you know, I want everybody to join, but it's because I believe in the community. So anyway. Yeah. That's awesome stuff there. And I have to tell you the story. So I haven't talked to you since Easter, and all of my family came over to my house for Easter. So my niece, who is 15, was asking me about turkeys. She just, you know, everybody knows what a turkey is, don't get me wrong, but she doesn't necessarily know what the caruncles are, or caruncles, however you want to pronounce it, the snood, you know, she just didn't know all that stuff. So the beard, she didn't know what a beard was. So she and I are talking, and she is not an outdoors person in the least. She does not even want to go outside to check the mail. So all of that about hunting and wildlife is just, it's Greek to her. So she was asking me all about the wattles, and I explained to her what wattles were. And so she was like, but I don't get it. Why do they have that? I said, well, it's just ornamental. You know, in the bird world, birds need that appearance to attract mates. They need that ornamental or very extravagant appearance, most of them. And the more extravagant, the more colorful, the more attractive they are to the other sex. And so I said, well, let me see if I can find a picture of some wattles for you. So I pull up on my phone wild turkey pics, and the first one that pops up is the pic that I used for the design of our boxer briefs. And I said, oh, I've actually got this picture on some underwear. And everybody at the table is like, what? And I said, oh, I didn't tell you all this. Well, let me go get them. So they're in the dirty clothes, of course, because I wear them all the time. So I go pull them out of the dirty clothes, and I put them on over my clothes that I had on for Easter. And I walk downstairs with those boxer briefs on, and they all just died. They loved those boxer briefs. So
full strut, baby.
Full strut. They're awesome. So anyway, that was just hilarious. And, you know, of course, the cameras start coming out to take pictures, and I'm like, oh, now, whoa, I have a rep. Not in the turkey world. That's a different kind of rep. But you guys can't be taking these pictures and posting them on social media, because I have an alter ego in the professional world. So anyway, y'all go check out the boxer briefs, the full strut boxer briefs, if you haven't seen them already. They're super cool. But anyway, I'm rambling on now. We've got Denny Gulvis with some great stuff. What do you think, Cameron? You want to jump in and roll with it?
See you guys on the other side.
One thing that they are absolutely incredible at is picking up movement. I mean, I just, all these times I've been with these turkeys and these hens, especially these hens in these groups, when I get the set right with them or whatever, I mean, I cannot tell you how I've been so amazed on some of the things that I've seen on how they can pick up movement. Now, when I've got a camera up there, and I'm a stickler for camouflage. I mean, I've always been for my whole life. You got to be when you're doing what I do. I don't use a blind, never use a blind my whole life. You know, and I want to be part of the woods. That's what I want to be. I want to be a tree. I want to be a stump. I want to be, you know, or at least look, portray that. So my camera is so well camouflaged. Actually, my camera is so well camouflaged that I got to be careful, because if I lay it down in the woods, but if I lay it down and maybe go 20 yards or so and call or whatever over the edge of a hill, I got to be careful, because there's times I actually lost my camera. I couldn't find it because it blended in so well. I mean, so if you can do that, you know you're doing something right. So the same with my clothes, you know, the same, everything. I have everything. I got leaves. I got all kinds of stuff to blend in as much as possible. So that's huge. But one thing that I found out when I'm working, especially when I'm working on the camera, and I've seen hens do this. I've seen young gobblers, young birds, young hens, old hens, whatever it is, and especially older gobblers. I mean, they just don't ever miss a movement. I mean, when I'm working with a camera, I've got a cover over top a little bit. I don't drape it over me or nothing like that, but I've got the camera right out there. And there's times when you got to move the focus. You know, the turkey moves a couple feet or whatever it is, it's out of focus. So I've got to move that little ring, and I'm only using one finger, camouflage finger now and everything, on that focus ring, and I'm only moving it maybe a quarter of an inch and a half an inch. And I've had hens pick that up from 25 yards away, and they give out that, uh-oh, I see something. You know, they don't know if it's a chipmunk or a gray squirrel at the time. They don't know if it's a deer's ear move, whatever it is, but they see something. They're letting everybody know that, uh-oh, something's just going on. Everybody be aware of this. Maybe it's nothing. You know, I mean, that's kind of like how they're talking, the way we do it. They're with the words that they, sounds that they make. You can imagine this. But I am so amazed every single year, and I don't know if it's just that they're getting better at it or whatever, probably because the predators, we got so many predators anymore, they've got to really, really be aware now. And but I can't tell you how many times, I mean, I've been crazy. Actually, I'll give you an example. One time, it's kind of funny, where I actually played it. I played the role a little bit. I was on a roost one morning, and I had birds all around me up, and there was a little bit of a hillside there, and the hens all flew out, and they landed up in front of me. They're about 20, 25 yards or so, and they're all feeding around in the leaves. And naturally, when the hens, when the birds come out of the roost like that, they're one big thing. There's a couple things go on. One of the biggest things is a lot of them get into fighting skirmishes or whatever it is. I mean, the pecking order, and we could talk all day about this, the pecking order is so intense with turkeys. I mean, it's amazing on how they, how strict it is and how one tries to outdo another or whatever. And a lot of these times of watching these birds come out of the roost, you got to remember now these birds live with each other every day. And when they come out, it's almost like a new thing for them. Like next thing you know, you got a three or four hens over here fighting and agitated hens and running around banging each other. And you got the beautiful, you know, agitated sounds coming out of the situation. Now you got another one going over here on the right. They might only last for 30 seconds, 20 seconds, whatever it is. But, you know, they all try to, like, gain something in there, you know, until they're settled back down again. And I see that every situation. Last week or last Monday or week before that, on Monday, I had a group fly down in front of me about, they landed about 30 yards. There was a big group of hens, which is exactly what I'm looking for. And when they hit the ground, there was at least four groups of hens in that big group that were immediately, as soon as they hit the ground, I mean, they just were going crazy with each other, chasing each other around, banging each other, trying to fight you. I mean, it was just, I mean, they were upset. And what's funny is with turkeys, like when they get one, this group get upset, and next thing you know, this one's over here got upset or upset. And then these agitated, but these agitated sounds, people don't, they don't realize how, a lot of guys don't realize how important those agitated sounds or fighting sounds really are and how natural they are throughout a turkey's daily life. I'm telling you. I've heard guys say, them agitated sounds, we don't need to do that fighting person at calling contest. My gosh, don't tell me that. That's one of the best calls that you could use in a woods. Because turkeys are like us. You know yourself, you're walking down the street and you see two or three guys here about a fight going on. What are we going to do? We're going to cross the street and see what's going on. I'm it's kind of like, wow, you know, big event. It's human nature. Turkeys the same way, you know what I mean? There's an agitation going on over here, whatever it is. And, you know, sometimes it's just short, little agitation. A lot of guys will say, well, in a calling contest, and I hear this a lot anymore, the guys say, they're asking for, you know, fighting sounds or agitate. Why? You know, it's so hard to lead into one or everything. No, it isn't. If you watch these turkeys, and I've been with them all the time, one hen, all she has to do is step in front of another one or pick something up in front of another hen. And that's just enough to make that one hen mad. Next thing you know, now you've got both of them whacking each other. You know, it's like, you know, you got your fighting person, yeah. Your agitated birds. They're not really intense fights, but it's just like people, like, you know, you're walking, you know, you're eating or somewhere, and all of a sudden you reach over and grab something out of somebody's plate. They're not going to like that too much, you know? So same thing with turkeys. So yeah. These little agitation sounds are some of the most important. I mean, you know, that's one of the things I should probably keep under my hat, but I'll tell you right now, they are absolutely natural to the woods. And as I said before, I can't say this enough, natural to the woods is what we want to do. You know, I mean, especially like in our calling, you know, when you asked me before about the calling, you know, what, we kind of think of calling to get an answer, call to get an answer, but that's not really what turkeys do. You know, they're saying something whenever, every time they call, they're saying something. They're asking a question. Are you here? Or, oh, I'm over here, or whatever. You know, I mean, there's, you know, we call and we expect an answer, or we hope for an answer, you know, but turkeys are not like that. You know, they're a little bit different, but they're very similar. So that, you know, I always, like I said, I try to liken it to our human, you know, I try to think of, but, and this is really, I talked about this last year too, to a couple guys. You know, when I call now, I try to think of saying something when I'm calling. You know, it's easier when you got a diaphragm call because it's kind of like coming from your mouth. It's almost like, you know, as close as your voice as you could possibly be because it's right there. It's hard when you're using a friction call because, you know, your hands are away from you and everything. But boy, when it's coming out of your mouth and everything. But so I want to say something. So I'll think, well, let's see, how would I ask a question here? So it might be just, no. Like that's almost questioning, you know. Then if I'm I'm over here, maybe a bird answers. Now I'm gonna say I'm over here. So it's like no, like that. It's just, you can see that the inflections are so different, but it's natural. That's what turkeys do. They don't just go no all the time, every time, no. But every hunter, almost every hunter does that over and over. You know, it's hard to break that upstep, what I call upstep yelping or whatever it might be. But yeah. How do you learn this stuff? There's only one way. You know, you got to listen to them as much as possible. And today, I mean, there are a lot of videos out there, YouTube, where years ago, as you talked about before, years ago, we didn't have that, you know.
Yeah.
So,
have you ever considered, I guess for audio wise, in my opinion, the best there is out there for people right now would be Lovett Williams CDs and cassettes, the Real Turkeys. Have you ever considered doing something like that?
I'm glad you asked me that. Yes, I did. You know, when I made my last video, Challenging Pressure Golfers, I ended it kind of like, if you watched it, I think it was that one or maybe the fall one. I said, I'll probably be back next time. And this is way back in the last 90s, I think it was the last time I made a video. And I said, next time I come back, I said, I'll probably be doing more on turkey talk. Because like I said, I was into turkey talk back then too, you know.
Yeah.
But I woke up one day and DVDs are gone. I mean, whatever happened to videos are gone. DVDs are gone. CDs are gone. I mean, where to go? In answer to your question, several years ago, with all this roost stuff and all this turkey talk that I have recorded, I was making a CD on audio CD on live turkey talk. It was going to be nothing about me. I would explain what the calls were. I mean, you know, what was going to happen. Then you just learn. You put it in your truck, put the CD in your truck or whatever your home or whatever, and just sit and listen to it and learn, you know. And I was really excited about it. I thought, wow, this, you know, people are going to love this. You know, I mean, it's going to be the greatest thing for people hunting turkeys. And I was sitting in my office making turkey calls one day. And I told this story a lot of times. Sit in my office, and a guy calls me up, and he says, hey, Gallus, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm making calls. He says, anything new? I said, yeah, I'm working on an audio CD. He goes, oh, you mean another DVD like you had before? I said, no. I said, you can't make them anymore. They don't do them. I said, this is a CD where you learn, it's going to be just audio on live turkey talk. And he kind of like, I didn't hear from him. And he finally said to me, now what would you want to do that for? I said, so everybody can, don't, you know, so people can learn how to call turkeys. I mean, from the real thing, everything. He says, man, don't you ever watch the Outdoor Channel? Where you been? He goes, I'm watching all these guys, he said, sitting in these blinds, he said, and they got four or five decoys out there. Listen to their calling, and they're all bringing gobblers home every day. I mean, it's like, and I'm thinking,
oh, no.
You know, and really I'm thinking to myself, it was just like him reaching through the phone and slapping me back to reality. It's like, wow. You know, I thought, man, maybe he's right. You know, maybe there isn't going to be interest in this. You know, I know 56, 760 callers in the calling circuit would probably for sure want to know that. But the average hunter throughout the country, and I told my wife when I was done talking to him, you know, I've got all this time and it's going to cost us a lot of money to put this CD together and advertising and everything. I said, I don't think it's going to be worth it. I don't think we're going to sell anything. And this was 8, 9, 10 years ago. I can't remember what it was now, 7, 8 years ago. And I put it on hold, and I never did come out with it because I just, everybody tells me, oh, yes, there's going to be. But I, you know, like I said before, it's changed a little bit. Turkey hunting's changed, you know. You know, I thought everybody was really, really interested in it. But no, not everybody's nuts about, you know, learning. I know the call.
Yeah.
But average Joe, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't really think that. And, you know, the formats today, if there was I can guarantee you, if DVDs were still available, if there was a way to do this, and everybody says they can go on YouTube, but everybody and their brother does YouTube. It's just different. You know, it's a whole different thing. You know, I like that one-on-one thing where I can, and the DVD or the video, I guess it was video when I did them there, and it just morphed into DVDs. But if I could still do that, I would. I mean, I've got so much incredible footage of hens and talking and, I mean, unbelievable stuff. And when I'm gone, it's just going to be gone. I mean,
wow.
that's the reality, unfortunately. But,
man, I hate that because, you know, I guess it's hard to argue with you on that because that is the persona that the hunting industry, I guess, puts out is what exactly you described. Most of those guys you hear on the Outdoor Channel aren't even really that skilled of callers, but they have visual aids and food plots and cellular cameras and everything else that they're selling to you. But
it evolved so much. You know, here's the biggest thing. Our world, people today, we just want things faster and easier. That's just the way we are. I mean, I'm guilty of it. Is anybody else? Faster and easier. You know, we don't want to put the effort into it anymore. I kind of liken it to the old time television. I grew up with the dial, having to go up and get up and turn the dial of the television. You know, now we're sitting on the couch and I've got a remote in my hand. When I start hitting the button on the remote and the batteries are dead, I'm hollering at my wife, go get me batteries. I lost my impatient. You know, hurry up and get me batteries. Yeah. Jeez, I can't. I mean, come on. Whatever happened, you know, I used to have to get up and turn the channel. Now we're so lazy, we can't even. But we want things fast and easy. And that's just, you know, we equip with all kinds of different devices and all of their, you know, but that's what, you know, I get back to what I said earlier. You know, I mean, it just changes it somewhat. And I'm worried about, because turkey hunting is so much fun. It's so rewarding, you know, if you do it the right way, I say. And I'm not criticizing anybody's way of doing things. I mean, you got your reaping now and all that kind of stuff. And that's, if it's legal, they do it, and that's up to whatever they want to do. I did things like you see reaping today, if you know what that is. I did that back 40 some years ago with my hands, and I did this in my seminars. You know, I mean, it was really cool. There was times when I would actually use my hand as a puppet, when, you know, and I actually had turkeys accept me, which was really the coolest thing, one of the coolest things I've ever had happen to me in the woods. And I had it a couple of different times where, and I'll give you a quick example of what happened. The first time it ever happened to me, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I had four young gobblers one time come in. And these young gobblers come in, and they got in around 12, 15 so yards. And I was doing light contentment calls and feeding calls to make them, keep them staying there. You know, there's certain calls that you can do. And that's what these light feeding calls, contentment calls. And if you do them the right way, I mean, you can actually make them start feeding. I've done that for years and doing that. Well, these young gobblers were feeding around in front of me, and I was filming them. I already had enough footage or whatever. So for whatever reason, my brother and I talked about it too, but whatever reason, I thought, I'm going to try something, you know, what the heck? So I remember now, I'm all camouflaged. I got the camera on my shoulder here, on my right shoulder, and they're right in front of me. They're all feeding right around me. And I've been doing these contentment calls for the last 20 minutes, and they've all been feeding around me. So I just thought, I'm going to pretend that my hand is a hen. So I brought up my hand real quick, like, and right away, the young gobblers, they jumped, their heads jumped right away. Like, but as soon as I did that, I went, meow, and I moved my hand, you know, just like the turkey. And they're kind of like back when they're still not sure what it is. And then I would reach down to the ground and pick a few leaves, things off the leaves and off the ground, and I'd be the feeding purse. And then I'd lift my hand back up again, and I'd go, meow. Now, and the more, and this is, I don't ever tell any false stories. These are all absolute true to life things. And the more I did that, the more I kept it natural, moving my hand around like a real hen would do and reach down and pick things up a natural hen would do, these turkeys, these gobblers, start to accept me. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, they thought, like, holy geez, they're coming over right beside me almost, like, and I was picking all that, all they could see was my hand, you know, but I had a camouflage glove on. So, you know, so this was going on. This went on for 5, 6, 7 minutes. I mean, I was like, holy, you know, to tell you something, there is nothing more satisfying or gratifying than to be accepted by a wild animal as being one of them. I can't even put that into words. I mean, it's like, yeah, in the wild. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So I'm going to take it as far as I could. And after 5 or 6, 7 minutes of doing this, I thought, I'm going to make it even better. So I reached over and my teeth, remember, I got a head net on and everything, all these leaves all over me and everything. I reached over and I grabbed my glove and pulled it off. So now my hand, to me, looked more like a real hand than it did before. So I kept those little feeding purrs going on and on. And I'm not lying to you, those turkeys, they stayed around for almost 20 minutes, and they were sometimes within yards of me just feeding. And they just accepted me as being, and I did that a number of times. I mean, wow. Throughout, and that was just incredible. Now, you got to be careful doing that back, you know, safety wise, because I never did that when the season was in, whatever, you know, because I'd be afraid of getting shot. You know, that takes me to the next thing. When I did my seminars, I used to spend at the end of the seminars at least a half hour on turkey safety. You know, don't wear blue, don't wear black, don't wear red, white, anything that resembles a turkey. Do not have a handkerchief in your pocket. Do not wear a hat that has a red mark on or whatever it is, you know, safety wise, you know. And now I look at today and I see guys out there actually holding gobblers in their hands and hide behind them and standing there. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is how much this has changed.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Mounted. I've seen guys with taxidermy mounted real turkeys walking around behind them trying to reap gobblers.
Exactly. And as I said, it's legal in some states. Thankfully, it's not legal. And, you know, I'm not criticizing anybody. You do whatever you want to do. That's up to you, as long as it's legal. As long as it's legal. Legal. But, you know, I don't like about that, what I don't like about it, and it kind of like touches on what I just said about the turkeys in my hand, is that it's taken advantage of the bird, because if there's one way of taking advantage of them, you're taking advantage of them. Because these gobblers, they just lose their mind over something like that. And they, and if you've seen it, they'll run up within 3 feet of the guys and shoot them right in the head 3 feet away. I mean,
oh, yeah.
That to me, like, I don't like that because, you know, I like turkeys. I mean, I love them. I don't have anything to kill them. And no, I have nothing against that at all. But I hate to see them being taken advantage of like that, you know. And they are, as far as I'm concerned. That's kind of like taking advantage of them. And, you know,
I think it absolutely is. I mean, I think if there's any method out there that takes advantage of turkeys that requires no skill or effort on part of the hunter, it would be that. Because any person on earth can hold a tail fan in front of them if they have, you know, good use of their arms.
Yeah,
and that,
you know,
that's all you have to do. Like, that's it.
And it's being done, and guys are going to criticize me for it, and that's fine. I'm old enough now I can take any criticism.
I get criticized a lot for it, too. And, you know, Andy and I disagree on it to some extent, and that's just, there's a big disagreement these days about that kind of stuff. But, I mean,
thankfully here,
people can disagree.
Here in Pennsylvania, it's illegal, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I remember when this first started happening, I was talking to a game warden, a well-known game warden. I come out of the woods filling one day, and he was standing there waiting for me, and we got talking and everything. And I was telling him about this reaping. I said, "You ever hear about this reaping?" You know, and he says, "No, what's that?" And I started telling him about it. I said, "You know, now guys are going out in the field and they're hiding behind fans and everything like this." And he interrupted me right away. He said, "Well, that ain't going to work here in Pennsylvania. You got to call a turkey in because that's basically the law. You know, I mean, you're supposed to call the turkey into you." And I says, "Well, they can still do that. They can still hide behind the fan and pretend call. I mean, you're still going to do that." Well, thankfully that our game commission, see, in Pennsylvania, if you use a blind, you can't actually set up a couple logs in front of you and hide behind it. You know, you're actually illegal sitting in a pot. What they want you to do in Pennsylvania, you've got to be covered completely around, all the way 360 degrees around and over top of you from above. So you got to be complete. If you're in a blind, you got to completely be engulfed up all the way around and above. So when you got to, if you're hiding behind a fan, that's illegal because you're using that as a hide. And, you know, something to hide behind. So thankfully that, hopefully that never changes, but
what there's several,
way more than that. It's the safety factor. I mean, I just can't believe that these guys are out there and not getting shot. That's what, you know, I used to say whenever I take anybody with them, if I seen anything that resembled a turkey color or whatever, I mean, I was on them right away. I'm worried about that. I mean, I'm worried about people are going to be getting killed, and it's going to happen. Yeah.
I hope the people who do that, especially public land or, you know, are using full taxidermy gobbler decoys to walk around behind, I hope their spouses, I hope they have large life insurance policies for the spouse. Because
it's not funny. You're exactly right. I mean, you know,
it's just a matter of time. I mean, even on private land, you never know who else is out there trying to kill a turkey that's gobbling, you know.
Oh, and, sure. You got people sneak in on, you know, you think that the private land, nobody can be there, but surely they're, you know, you never know. How can you be 100% sure? You know.
Never know. And it takes about half a second for somebody to make the wrong decision and change your life forever. But
yeah.
Anyway, I agree with you. I think that is the main reason that it's illegal in Pennsylvania. I believe New Jersey, Alabama just made it illegal. It's illegal on public lands in Tennessee and South Carolina. Illegal in North Carolina, I believe. It's illegal in 12 or 13 states, I believe. But I honestly think it should just be a uniform across the board. That just doesn't need to be in turkey hunting, in my opinion. And it sounds like yours is the same way. But other people disagree with that. And that's their prerogative.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll jerk off the subject of that right now. But, you know, we'll get back into what we really were talking about in calling. I mean, you know, certain calls and different things like that. That's just...
Yeah.
The biggest thing, you know, whenever you have the opportunity to actually call a wild animal, there's nothing to it, you know. And like I said about calling devices, you know, calling devices have come such a long way. You know, when I look at some of the older guys years and years ago when I first started, I mean, I had cousins and things like that. Even Bob, when he first started making turkey calls, diaphragm calls, interestingly, they would take like a gallon plastic jug and they would cut the plastic jug into a horseshoe-type shape. And then they would bend it halfway, and then they would take latex gloves or prophylactics or whatever it is, and they would stretch them in there and fold them over and staple them together, and they'd put them in their mouth and make the call. I mean, make a decent, I mean, you know, That's the original, some of the original first diaphragm calls. Ben Lee made them with lead. Remember that? I used to buy Ben Lee's lead calls. My gosh, I wonder how many people died over that lead call. You know what I mean? With how many times walking around with a lead, big chunk of lead in your mouth. You know what I mean? They've come a long, long ways now. And I do it now. I've got six different diaphragm calls that I've been working with here now. And I mean, it's so neat to be able to make, you know, to make things from your own. I'm speaking for a lot of guys out there, because there's so many guys, as I said, making different calls now and things, but they're just something too, you know, to be able to make a device that you can use or someone else can use that know that they can, you know, actually speak to a wild animal. You know, I mean, that's so cool.
Yeah. But do you want to talk about your calls? We've talked about it with Matt Van Sice and several other people who've run your calls, because they are a little different than your standard industry type diaphragm calls in how they're made and how they're blown. And I need to get better on them, because in my opinion, the people who take the time to learn your diaphragm calls that you actually make sound more like hens than anything I've heard. And I mean, you would probably know that, because you listen, you've heard more hens than anyone else on earth. So I would assume you know how to make a call to replicate that. But do you want to talk about your calls, what makes them different, and how the kind of the difference of how calling on them might be different than, you know, the diaphragm call somebody picked up at the local Walmart?
Yes. I mean, I make every single one of them by hand here. It's just something that came from, it's all started back, you know, kind of like today, almost everyone's diaphragm calls today, almost every company that makes a diaphragm call, they have cut latexes. I mean, we're all familiar with it. They got all different kinds of cuts, you know, I can't remember. I don't even know all the names, you know, of the cuts and reeds. But way back 40, when I saw, I've been making, hard to believe this, I just thought about this the other day. I've been making turkey calls for 48 years. That's just almost unbelievable to me that I've been sitting here doing that for 48 years. But when Bob and I, and Bob was doing it before me, and when I can remember, we used to go down to Penn, and we would make a couple of different calls, and we'd go down there, and we'd listen, you know, we'd record the turkeys, and we'd listen to the hens and call right in there with the hens, and, well, what do you think of that? There's the hen, she's yelping. We still got to get that. And Bob calls it the gruff call. You know, and I've said this many times, Bob called it the gruff call. He says, listen to that gruff. Listen, we got to get that gruff. He says, gruff. And what he meant is what I call the resonance, the throaty resonance. Now, every hen has it. Every turkey has it. It's in your throat. If you never had the opportunity to be close to a hen talking, or even a gobbler, close, I mean, close by feet, because whenever a hen starts yelping or whatever it is, I mean, you can actually, that throatiness, that resonance comes up through their throat, through their neck region. I mean, it's unmistakable. I mean, you can almost feel it on some hens, you know, especially like a throaty resonant hen or whatever, really maybe a raspy hen. I mean, you can feel it when she does it. Now, if that same turkey was maybe 40, 50 yards away, she would sound a little bit differently. You don't notice it until you're really close. So we would be down the pen, and he says, we got to get this gruff call. Somehow are we going to do it? And we tried all kinds of things with different latexes and all what was available at the time. And one day, and I'll never forget this, he says, let's try something. Let's try to cut. Why not cut some of these reeds? You know, why not? Maybe that'll give us that resonance or that, he calls it, that gruffness, he says. So we cut a few of them, made a few calls and cut them up there like, and we run down to the pen like, and he start doing it. And I just shook my head. I said, nah. I said, that's definitely raspier. It's definitely, I can hear rattling in there, but boy, it doesn't sound like that hen right there, or those hens. It just, you know, we experimented with it, and we only did it for a little while and put them away. That was done, because what we were hearing, we could hear the latex. I mean, we could hear that flapping latex, you know, and it just sounded tinny. It was just a tinny type of sound. It wasn't what that turkey, that in-throat sound. So we just kept developing in different ways, and Bob passed away, and I kept doing different things here. But I make my calls completely differently. There's never a cut in them. The only cuts I have in some of the newer ones, but it's not a cut. I have a split, and I'll talk about that a little later, but I have a split horizontal on some of my new calls. But it's not a cut reed where you'll hear the reed rap. Flapping like that. I've developed a way to make the calls so that there's different tensions through each latex, each reed. You know, every call has different reeds. I've got, you know, doubles that have two reeds. You got triples and mass or four runners that have four reeds and two and a halves and every one of those. And I try to take advantage of each one of those reeds. So what I do is I have ways that I put tension, different tension, various tension throughout the call, the latex, And sometimes it creates a wrinkle. And a lot of guys, I've had guys call me up after they bought the call and they'd say, well, the heck, you got wrinkles in this call. There's something wrong with this call. You gave me a bad call. And the first thing I say, does it sound all right to you? If that wrinkle is just forget about seeing, you know, when I make a turkey call, it's not something of beauty. I don't want it to be judged on how it looks. You know, does it sound like a turkey? So I've got, and it took me a lot of development, a lot of different things. And the other thing is the call is there and the call is able to produce a number of, one of the things about the calls that I have, and I'm not pushing, I don't care if anybody buys any of my calls. It doesn't matter. I'm not here to push them because my dad said I was the worst salesman in the world. And I am, because I hate. I would go to a calling contest and thank God I had a great wife and my mom and dad would go with us. And I'd sit up in the booth. We'd have all the calls set up in a booth there at the time, whatever I had. And, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable running the calls in front of everybody like that. I just didn't feel comfortable pushing something like that. So thank God my wife, my mom and dad were there. And next thing you know, within 5 minutes, I was sneaking out the back going, I was leaving and they were there to sell the calls. So thankfully,
oh my
dad always said, you got to push them calls. You got to do this. You got to do that. But I just didn't feel comfortable with it. But what I do, I mean, the call needs to be blown a specific way. And, you know, most guys today with a cut reeded call, no matter what the cut reeded call is, they blow the call differently. And here's what I'm going to try to explain this the best I can. Whenever you put a diaphragm call in, and especially a lot of the calls now are, they're a little bit heavier latex. Mine are kind of a thinner latex too. But when you blow a call, like you got a three-read, four-read call out there, what happens is you kind of almost explode. You have to explode into the call, like you huff to make the call make the sound. You explode into it. I call it a square edge, and that, if you can understand what I'm going to kind of understand this better. But when a hen talks, when a real turkey talks, they roll into it. It's like a meow, meow. And they have that, what I call the key bass. That for a lot of guys call it the front end. Some call it they say a front end, you got a middle and a back end. But I don't like that explanation, because when you say front end, back, middle, and back end, your mind sees three different things there that way. And you think that you got to make all three of those things to make a yelp. Well, when a turkey yelps, there's not three parts to it. It's all one combined meow. It's all one combined sound. And it starts with one of the most important sounds is the key bass. And I call it the key bass. That would be what everybody calls the front end, that high note. Every hen has that. Every hen has that. They have it from the time when they were first out of an egg. They had their peep, their poult whistles. And then as the months go by, their voices kind of like get you more and more. They start into almost yup, and you get into your regular keys. You go from poult whistles to key. So key. You hear the keys. Then all of a sudden, as their voice gets more and more, it's like now it starts to work into a yup. Key yow. And then they get older in 3-4 months. Now you key yow. Like that. And then, you know, after they start to get into more like a half a year old or whatever it is, and then all of a sudden you got your yelp. But that key, that front end, that high key bass, that key bass is so in every single hen's voice to different degrees. Even an old gravelly, throaty hen, if you were standing next to her when she first starts her notes, she always going to have that meow, 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 meow. It's in there. And when I try to tell guys that I've been working with, I always tell them it might take you a year to get a good, natural key bass yelp. And that would be the high-end yelp, that big meow. Every hen has that. I mean, every time you hear a hen in the woods, a lot of them have that. Everybody thinks you have to have that. No. That's sure, you can get to that point later, but that you got to get a good natural, what I call a fleshy, throaty key bass, you know? And so when a guy will send me a segment and they're okay, I'm going to do the key bass. When I listen to it, what I hear is I hear airy. I hear whistly. What they're doing is they're calling from the front of their mouth. The front of their tongue, they're using the roof of their mouth, their teeth area. And when you do that with a diaphragm call, you're going to hear the diaphragm call. When you're working with my call, I always suggest, and I used to tell this to Matt picked up on it right away. I mean, that's one, Matt was an exceptional person being able to pick things up. And he is. I mean, and one of the biggest things is I always used to tell him, I says, think about calling with your voice. Because when everybody should think about this too. When I suggest this all the time, I always say to somebody, you ever called your voice? And now most of them will say, no, well, maybe a little bit, or no, I can't do it. I'll say, well, let me hear do a turkey yelp. And they'll go, no. I say, okay, well, higher. And they'll go, no, no. Next thing, higher than that. No. I says, holy geez, there you go. You just told me you couldn't call like a hen. Everybody can do it to an extent, you know what I mean? But what that does, when you start to call, think about calling with your voice. Your voice comes, your voice box is back in your throat. Naturally, that's where it is. Now, when you think that way with a diaphragm call, if you can get into that concentration or that main thought of being back in your throat, because when I call with my calls, nothing's moving in my mouth. My mouth is usually wide open. My tongue's not moving. The only part of my tongue is moving is where it's going down in my throat. I'm stopping and starting every single yelp and every single call from where my tongue is going back in my throat. And if you can learn to do that, you get away from that upfront mouth, any of that mouthy stuff like that. Because when it starts to go above your tongue or back towards your teeth or your better front of your tongue, middle of your tongue, whatever, all of a sudden now you'll hear it sounds diaphragm-y. It sounds artificial. So that's a huge thing. But when guys, what with most of these cut-readed calls, they're relying on that cut read to get that, what Bob used to call gruff, the gruff call, or what I call the resonance. Or the raspiness, or whatever. They're trying to get that flapping reed to give them that raspiness. And, you know, it's kind of a crutch. I like to look at it as a crutch. It will, anybody can put the call in and blow it, and you're going to get that. But to get that natural throaty, that no, that real hens have, that key bass into, once you get that key bass, and I tell everybody this, you work with that key bass till you get it a natural, nice, smooth, fleshy key bass. And then once you get that, you can just open up into any yelp from that point on, but you got to have a good solid key bass, so it's natural, not whistly and not artificial sounding, and that's huge. And I have what I call an exercise. I mean, anybody's interested in that, I can explain to them someday if they ever want to. I'll explain to them. It's a good tool that I use all the time. And to give you a little short example, what that exercise is that when you take my call and you put it in your mouth and you stand up, and I always say this, you stand up, and I use a little bit of visualization here. What I'm going to be doing is I'll take a deep breath with a call in my mouth. I'll stand up and I'll put my hand, left hand, I just use left hand, don't matter which one. I put it as high to the ceiling as I can, up high, or as high as I can reach. Now that's where I'm going to start. And I'm going to be blowing one long note the night before 4 to 5 seconds till I run out of air. And what I'm going to be doing is from the high pitch, I'm going to start with as high as that, my back throat high, as high as I can get with a call. And I'm going to go, all the way down to the lowest sounds. And while I'm loosening up my throat as I start from the high pitch, the highs, which is really tight in my back throat, which is going to get the highest note. And as I'm bringing my hand in front of my face, it's just a visualization. You don't have to use your hand, but it's something I can just, you know, I visualize. I can actually see my hand, and I know my hand is coming in front of my face as it's going down towards the ground. That's the pitches are changing in the call. And all the different sounds from that high all the way down to where the gravelly of the sound when you're the call will be going right at the end. So all from that 4 seconds, think how many different pitches are in there. Well, each one of those you could actually, there's different hens in every one of my calls. There's 4, 5, 6 different hens in there if you know how to find them in every one of those calls. And that exercise will help you. So if I'm going to do just like a high pitch that that a hen will do, my hand might only be dropping down for maybe 3 inches. A little bit more, go, now I'm dropping down maybe 8-10 inches or whatever. But that exercise is an excellent, excellent tool. And I use it all the time. I still use it all the time.
That's good. That sounds like great advice.
But the key is to do it, you know, with my call. And the other thing I always tell everybody, and most guys will just pick up my call because they're so used to using a split-readed call or a cut-readed call. And they blow kind of like hard on it. They really blow hard. You don't have to do that. You know, if you're working on my calls, first thing, best thing to do is go easy with them. Just let the call make the sound, you know, in the back throat. Let it work. You don't have to call real loud. You know, most turkeys don't call loud anyhow. Most people call too loud in the woods. Most hens only call, and I found this out for sure, a lot of times most hens only call as loud as they have to. Why would they call any louder than they have to? You know, because it gets them in trouble, as I said in the beginning of this podcast. You know, that's huge. But the secret, like I said, there's tensions in the calls, And if you learn to work from the back of your throat and bring your stomach from down in your stomach. So when I'm calling, this is really kind of like it's a hard thing for me because I don't use a solid tripod when I'm filming. I use a monopod, which is a single monopod stick. And that kind of like holds the camera. I put the monopod in my knee when I'm sitting on the ground. I put it right between my legs and I have the camera on my shoulder. And I'm using that monopod, so I don't use a full, usually hardly ever use a full, you know, three-legged tripod. So if you call, see, when I'm calling, my whole body's moving, just like a real hen. If you watch a real hen yelp, she's body, her whole body moves. Her whole body will move when she calls, almost all, especially when they start to lean in a little bit. You know, if you watch their tail's moving a little bit, their head's moving, their neck might be moving a little bit. So when I'm calling, I'm doing almost the same thing because I'm bringing everything up from down in. I'm starting and stopping everything from the back of my throat, and I'm kind of like on almost like a huff thing, but not quite huff. And it's like, you know, so you can imagine here I am. And when I'm zoomed in with a camera, you know, on 20 power of the camera, I got to be careful. Most of the time, I can't call when the camera's zoomed in because the whole camera's bouncing around when I'm calling. You know, it just bounces. So I almost have to zoom back so you can't really, see that bouncing in there. But when you're doing it the right way, your whole body should be moving. I have guys tell me after I explain to them how to use the call and work the call, they'll say, man, my stomach's been bothering me. My stomach's hurting. I'm like, yes. I'll say, well, hey, you're doing it the right way then. My back throat's bothering me. Well, it hurts. Yes. You know, it's like anything else. You haven't done that. You know, once you do it a while, then you don't even, you know, your muscles get used to that and your throat gets used to that. But and it's not hard. Like, you know, if you try to blow my calls like a split-reeded call or a diet or whatever you call a cut-reeded call, you're not going to get the right sounds. You're going to get squeals. You're going to get something, but you got to learn to get that. And most guys, and I see this a lot, especially diaphragm callers, most guys, they start short yelping, what I call short yelping. And you know, they kind of cut it off like, chow, 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 chow. You know, hens will do short yelps, but usually that, even when a real hen does those short yelps like that, all that key bass in is still there, that nyop, 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 where a lot of guys fail with that, especially with a cut reading call, you're going to hear that. It almost sounds like sometimes some guys say it sounds like a squirrel bark, and it does. But that's because they don't have that nice nyop, 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 nyop that hens do. All hens have a little bit different voice, but they have that voice characteristic. And one of the biggest things is that key bass lead in. And that's huge. That's huge for a real turkey yelping like that. And I could go on all day like that. You know, like I said, the last two calls, I got a Red Master and a Gray Master, the last two I made. And they're made with a little different latex. And I've got what I call a horizontal split. Now, this isn't a cut on a reed. It's left to right in the back of the three quarters of the way back of the call. And what that does, that kind of like help let the air in on the top reed in the middle and the second reed in. And it helps the air to go in. And I just found out that it just helps somewhat to get a little different tones and working with those different tones. But back to that exercise, and I failed to mention this. You know, if you think about that exercise and you're doing that 4 second, that meow, meow, all the way down, what does that remind you of? It reminds you a little bit of a box call. You know, box calls have been around, probably one of the first calls that were ever made, I guess, you know, way back. They've been using box calls forever. And if someone is good with a box call, I mean, in the woods and a little distance, someone that's really good at it, that's probably one of the most realistic sounds there is by far. I mean, somebody that's good at it. You listen to Matt Van Sykes on a box call. I mean, if he's hitting it right, oh my gosh. I mean, it's to me in my ears from turkeys. I mean, that's it. That's it right there. That's you're close as you're going to get. The only bad thing about it is there's friction. You can sometimes hear the friction. And the friction is, you know, if you just get rid of that friction, you got it right there, you know. But here's what happens is when you take the box call, and you take the lid and you bring it across the side. You bring it from eow. It's the same thing as that exercise I was just talking about. You know, if you learn to bring that all together, all your notes from the highs to right into the throaty, you know, whatever you want. Like I said, each call has different sounds in there, but you can make different like different hens. But that's kind of, and I'll tell a lot of guys too. You know, if they're having trouble with their diaphragm calls or sounding realistic, I'll say use a box call or whatever device you're used to using. Use it as a tuning fork. You know, do a couple of yelps, do a yelp on your box call or whatever call you're doing, and then try to duplicate that same sound. And what happens is that'll keep you from doing that short yelping, that short note yelping. Because here's what I think. I'm not positive of this for sure, But I think like when we're starting to yelp with a diaphragm call, we get those first notes coming out and it feels good. It sounds right. Then as soon as you start to go into that next phase, what people call the middle, all of a sudden it starts to sound artificial to you. So what do you naturally common sense, or we just can't help it, we shorten it up. Because it sounded good in the beginning, and all of a sudden, as soon as it started to go away from us, we shorten it up. So we get those you start shortening it up. But a real hen, she has that. Listen to a real hen when she lifts her head up. No. Hear that? And I can. What the advantage I have is I can, like I said, I can see yelps, and I can see the distance of that yelp. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You watch a lot of guys that's short. And a hen, if you drag it out, you can see that whole thing. You know, on my programs, I'm just telling a few guys about this, and this is something I just learned just recently. I've got a new program where I can actually watch hens, my videos, I can watch them in slow motion. So that's really cool. Has that been a great thing? Because, like, if I have a hen really close and she starts yelping, yelp, yelp, I'll slow it way down to yelp. You can start seeing her mouth opening like, and it's coming up through her throat. Yelp. Wow. I'm telling you, that is an incredible tool to learn on how to bring your yelps up, bring your sounds up like that. But the slow motion, where do we use slow motion in? How to swing a bat, how to swing a golf club. You know what I mean? We can learn from slow motion, and same thing with turkey calling, you know, and that's a great thing. And just think, you know, I tell a lot of guys too, that I've been working with here, think of calling, don't care about what it sounds like right now, but think of doing that call in slow motion at first, you know, slow motion. When you learn slow, and then you got to take this in baby steps. You know, we all want things, as I said before, fast and easy, but baby steps is the key. You know, I mean, you learn first and then slowly progress. You know, I mean, and that's the big thing, and kind of like takes me to the next subject. I mean, we could talk all day. My big bad thing is I talk too much. As you can notice, I don't even let you say anything here. My wife hits me about the head about that all the time. He says, don't you ever let anybody else talk, which I get carried away with this stuff. But we talk about, and at least like what I feel is one of the most important thing in turkey hunting, and I don't want to go away without mentioning this, and that's patience. You know, I mean, for so many years I've been doing this and working with turkeys, one of the biggest things that I've learned, especially as a filmmaker, you know, and that filming has actually helped me with this, because I've got so much equipment out there, you know. Everybody today, you know, most guys are running and gunning. You know, you run through the woods, and we can spend all day on this too, but, you know, trying to find a gobbler, you run from one place to the next place, and they never let the things play out. They never let a situation play out. You know, just because you walk in the woods and you blow out a call or you do something, the turkey don't answer, doesn't mean nothing to me. Just think about it. Common sense tells you that, wow, you know, there's turkeys all, if you know the turkeys are somewhere in your area, if you know you do have turkeys, every time you make a turkey sound, Every turkey heard it. Just because the gobbler does not answer that doesn't mean that he's not interested. I mean, there's satellite gobblers out there too that are interested just as much as that gobbler who has 5 different hens or 10 different hens. He's just as interested, but he don't gobble for a specific reason. And so I've learned that patience is one of the absolute best thing. I mean, you can't, the way I do things now, you can't even believe. And I'll give you a normal situation. What I usually do a lot of times, I'll get into an area where I know there's turkeys. I'll pick up my setup spot where I'm going to have my camera equipment set up, my microphone set up. I always use run my microphone, my left, my right, a stereo type situation. And then I'll just go out maybe 50 yards out in front, whatever might be a clearing there, a gas well, whatever it might be. And then I'll create a scenario. It consists of a natural scenario. It could be a couple of hens yelping, a couple of hens clucking, feeding calls, maybe a gobble once in a while, or whatever it is. I'll create a natural scenario. It's normal to what I would expect maybe a hen would do or hens would do in that situation. And I'll go back and sit back and then go completely quiet and let it play out. Remember now, common sense tells you that every turkey, remember we talk about their hearing, how good they can hear, every turkey heard it. There's turkey. There's some over there. I can hear that there. Now, you think they're just going to stand around and keep eating? Most of them are going to come, a lot of them are going to come and investigate, you know, and it might take them 15 minutes, a half hour, maybe more than that, 45 minutes. Whatever, but I can't tell you how many times by sitting back and just being patient, when all of a sudden, maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes later, a gobbler will gobble. What is he doing? He's doing that searching gobble that I talked about in the picket spot calling. He heard us. He heard me talking. He heard all the words. All of a sudden, he says, where'd everybody at? Where are you at? Where are you at? And next thing you know, that you hear that gobble or whatever it is, or he'll come in quiet. Next, I just see him out there. And it takes skill too, woodsmanship. You know, you can't just sit there in one spot because remember, as I said, turkeys see movement. They're looking for movement all the time. The one thing that he's looking for is movement. He's picking out or she's picking out movement. I mean, that's what he's looking for all the time. So you can't be sitting there moving your head left and right, moving all around, because you can bet that that periscope comes up over that bank or whatever it is there, and he's only, you know, his eye is probably, what, maybe in 1 inch from the top of his head. You know, as soon as he lifts that thing up, we don't even know, he lifted his head up, and he looks and he sees you're over there moving your head back and forth or whatever. Boop, he pulls his head back down. You didn't even know it. I've learned to sit tight, and, you know, most of us, because just in our human daily activities, when we look left and right, we turn our head to the left. When we look to the right, we turn our head to the right. Well, I've learned there's techniques where, and this is, you know, something that just comes from experience. You know what I mean? If you sit and look straight ahead of you, and then just move your eyes to the left, move your eyes. And this, you know, you can say, well, that drives me crazy, but how good you want to be at this, you know, move your eyes to the left, scan them to the left, scan them to the right. And if you want to look further to the right, all you got to do is slowly, like clockwork, move your head to the right and then take up that whole area. And then if you want to go over to your left, you know, and that's how you do it. I mean, that's the way. And you, but I can't tell you how much patience. How guys will say, well, I don't want to hunt like that. That's deer hunting. That's sitting somewhere, you know, and I like to be able to get a goblin bird and call them in. Sure, everybody like to do that, but aren't you out hunting? I mean, that's a technique. I mean, if you want success in the woods, you want to kill turkey. You got to remember, common sense tells you turkeys are out there. They're interested. These gobblers are interested. Each one's interested to a different degree. And if they, just because they don't answer my call, doesn't mean a whole lot to me. I know they heard me. I know that they, and as long as I played the right thing and played the right role and made the right scenario. And I'll give you an example of that. I've used this a couple of times already, but just a few years ago, Cody, my son Cody, and we took his girlfriend out. She wanted to get one of her first gobblers. And we had her out in the morning, early morning on the first day. And she was able to take a nice gobbler that morning. And they were going to a wedding, I think. So Cody and Caitlin, they left. And I dropped them off. So I said, I'm going to go out a little bit filming. You know, here it was the first day. I knew there'd be a lot of guys out. So I went to a place that I like. I mean, I like to sit there. It's a place where I can see and listen a long ways, like an old strip cut that growed up a little bit now. But I can see 500, 600, 700 yards all over. I knew that I'll be able to listen here and see what's going on, monitor the whole area. And as I was sitting there, you know, I got in this spot and I picked out and got all my stuff. I didn't even have my microphone set up. I just sat there with a camera. And next thing you know, you see a vehicle going down the road over there, and then they get out of their vehicle and they call and they wouldn't normally slam the door after a couple seconds and go. And then, but way out across the hill, probably good 600 yards, 500 to 600 yards away, there was a truck parked over there. I could see it. This guy must have drove up into the field there, like, and they drove way out there, and that's where he was parked on the first day of turkey season. And it was almost coming up on 11 o'clock, and Pennsylvania got quit at 12 o'clock on that first 2 weeks. So I'm sitting there watching, this truck was there, and I was listening, and normal things are going on. I don't think I heard any gobblers that day, you know, whatever. But probably around 11 o'clock or so, I look, and I can barely see. The guys were walking to the truck. There was two guys. And I'm looking at them. I was watching them in binoculars. And both of them come to the truck, and they put their gun in. I was watching them put their gun in the truck. And normally with it, and then the guy on the left, the driver, he walked about 25 yards to the left of the truck, and the other guy, the passenger, went about 25 yards out into the field, like to the right, in the wood there, or kind of like a grown-up honeysuckle area. And each one of them, I could barely hear them. Each one of them started calling. They just did a few calls, like, I could barely hear them over there calling. And they waited maybe 30 seconds, 40 seconds, like everybody else does. And then they got, both of them got in the truck, backed the truck up, and they drove all the way down in, hit that little tram road there and drove down. And it took them, you know, 5, 8, 9 minutes to get out of there, and they were gone. Probably 5, maybe 10 minutes later, maybe 15 minutes, I don't remember exactly. I was looking, scanning around, like, and I look over right where that truck was parked, right where that driver was standing when he called, I see a dot. And I get my binoculars up, and there is a gobbler standing there with a 10-inch beard, standing right exactly where that guy called 10, 15 minutes ago. And right then I thought, holy Jesus, that perfect example of what goes on. I mean, that's, you know, how many go run through the woods and you just don't let a situation play out. And unbelievably, I mean, it was so cool because when he stepped out over there, I thought, what the heck, I'm gonna have a little bit of fun. So I just gave him a couple calls. Oh, he gobbled. And once I got attention, he came. He comes 600 yards the whole way across there and come right down in front of me and walk right on by me. And I thought, boy, why'd I even do that? Because I might just kill. I got another 10 minutes here and see if somebody might shoot the gobbler, you know. But that's a perfect example of how We don't let a situation play out. Or we run and gun, we run and gun. And that's, I guess that's a technique, you know, you can do it. But remember, you're, and especially to somebody who don't have a lot of property to hunt or whatever, you know, I mean, if you've got a lot of place to go, that's, you know, that's all right, I guess, if you want to do that. But as a filmmaker, as a, you know, as a cameraman, that has been the tool. And I've, and you know, you got to kind of learn that too. You know, I, being that I've been doing this for so long now and I learned how good it works. I mean, it just, I get carried away over this stuff. I mean, it really is. It's pretty intense. At least to me, it is. I mean, like I said, and I told you I was a little bit mental.
You know, you've dedicated a large part of your life to this, and it's a passion of yours. And so, yeah, that's, and look, it's why you're on the show.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny you should say, like, a lot of times I'll ask for permission to certain places. And I don't think I said this. I can't remember if I said this today. I don't think I did. But, like, I'll go to a farmer or whatever it is, and I'll ask permission, you know, if I could film in their land or whatever, you know. And especially a lot of people, most of the people that I go to are older, you know, they own the land, they've owned the land for years or whatever. Like, this happened a lot of times. And I'll go up and I'll, you know, can I please, would it be okay for me to film turkeys on your land? And that's all I do is film. I'm studying their voices. I've been studying their voices for over 40 some years. And they're just sitting there listening to me talking. And, you know, they're just going on and on. And I says, I just want to hear what they say. I want to learn what they say. And then they kind of got like this question mark. And I can see this question mark on their head when I'm talking to them. And then they just look at me and go, no, why do you do that? I'm just like, that's a perfect question. I don't know what the answer to that is. How do you answer something like that? Why do you do that? It's a good question. Why does somebody want to sound like a turkey, talk like a turkey? You know, it's crazy. But, you know, that's what we do. I mean, it is. And it's funny, but I've had that happen a lot of times. Why would you want to do that?
Yeah. Very good. Well, I tell you, I have enjoyed having you on the show again. And, you know, it's just, your passion is obvious, and you know it's infectious. And you know, for somebody like me that is a turkey nut, I just thoroughly enjoy it. And so, you've got several products out there that people can watch and listen to and run themselves, calls that they can run themselves that, you know, can make them better at being turkey hunters or turkey callers or, you know, communicating with turkeys. But how can we find that, those products? You don't have a website per se, do you?
No, I mean, that's one thing my wife has always knocked around, and she said, you got to get a website, you got to get, but I told you earlier, I'm not a salesman. I'm not, my dad was a good salesman. I'm not a salesman, and I don't, but when you can get a hold of me, I have a couple different ways. One is I have an email address. A lot of people get to me through that way. It's Denny Gulvas, DennyGulvas, V as in Victor, AS, at Gmail. Simple. DennyGulvas@gmail.com. And I have a phone number. Anybody interested, 814-590-1920. And I also have a Facebook page. You can message me on Facebook. Just look up my name on Facebook, and you can message back and forth. But that's basically it. I don't have a website, a particular website to go to. And I know I'm kind of lacking in that, but I'm not really interested. I'm more into spending time with turkeys than I am into that kind of part of thing. You know, I do like to make calls and sell calls, I guess so. But my wife tells me, come on, we got to sell some more calls. But it takes me a long time to make the calls too. That's the other thing, you know. It takes me a long time. If somebody called me up and says they needed 200 or 300 calls by next week, I would pass out because it ain't never going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, this has been good, and I would encourage anyone listening, you know, that wants to get better, that wants to be better. And I'm going to say this, and I'll be one of the first ones to say it. You don't have to be the best turkey caller to kill turkeys. Denny said it, Cameron has said it on the show, but I'm going to tell you what, the guys who have fantastic woodsmanship skills and who have not mastered because no one ever has or ever will, but who are just really, really good turkey callers are murdering turkeys. And if you want to be better at it, then yes, you've got to be the complete package. And so one way to do that is to get some of, you know, get Denny's DVD, get, you know, try to get the recordings of actual hens calling and listen and pay attention and learn how to imitate, work with your calls and spend time doing it. And so it's going to do nothing but make us better turkey hunters and turkey killers if we do those things. So,
well, I appreciate that. And the other thing is, I did leave out one thing. I do also have my products in Midwest Turkey Call Supply. I do have the calls there. I think I have some DVDs there too. So, I mean, that's another place that they wanted to find them. So, but I appreciate that. And it was certainly it was a pleasure having the invitation to come here today and speak with everyone. It was nice. It's an honor for me to be here. And I always enjoy speaking about the wild turkey and sharing some of the ideas that that I've learned about from the wild turkey. There's nothing, as far as I'm concerned, and you know more than just as much as anybody else, there's nothing more exciting.
Dead on with that. Thank you, Denny.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody out there. Be safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck to you too.
Thank you.
Goodbye. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I would love to know everything that he knows.
I'd love to know half of it.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. Another great part of that interview. That was an awesome phone call, Denny. And I mean, I really enjoyed it. If you didn't learn something from those 2 hours we just released, you're just not good at learning. I don't know.
Yeah, you already know it all. So why would you even go hunting?
Yeah, why are you listening to a podcast about it at that point? So
yeah.
Anyway, it was awesome. I really appreciate Denny taking time. I hope, you know, guys, you may want to check out his calls too. They're different. They're definitely different than what you're probably used to, but he gave a lot of advice on how to use them in there. And the people who can run them, man, does it sound like a turkey.
Now, yes, they do sound like turkeys.
So might check those out too, or send Denny an email and just let him know that you really enjoyed hearing him on our show. We'd appreciate that too. That could be the favorite of the week.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
Just to add a part B on there, and we're going to say it one more time. You guys be safe out there. A lot of you, your season's just opened, and seems like there's a stay-to-day opening from here on out, even though that's not really the case. But you guys be safe. We love having you listen to the show. If you're gone, then there goes our only listener.
Yeah, please don't leave, and be safe. Don't bait with crickets, especially in Mississippi. You'll get caught. And that'll be the three favorites of the week.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. We know that you have choices. We appreciate you spending your time with us. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the Turkey Hunter podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please go on over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. And make sure to head over to www.iamturkeyhunting.com to subscribe for free turkey hunting tips, tactics, strategies, and product reviews to help you have a more successful turkey season. And stay tuned for upcoming episodes on hunting afternoon birds, how to film your hunt, and the breeding cycle of hens, as well as some guest interviews. Thanks again for listening. We know your time is valuable, and we appreciate you sharing some of it with us. See you next week.